Tonight on The Wire, hosts of 2SER's Glam City, Dr. Tamsin Peach and Dr. Anna Clark, speak to proud Wiradjuri man Nathan Sentence, whose life goal is to decolonise the archives. Nathan works as a First Nations Cultural Programs Officer at the Australian Museum. He thinks it's important that memory institutes people their collections and wants the glam sector, that's galleries, libraries, archives and museums, to not just collect the objects but connect them to the people and cultures they come from.
Well, Aboriginal epistemology, I'm talking about sort of Aboriginal knowledge systems. Something like the Australian Museum, which is considered a natural history museum, works a lot with Western knowledge and Western science, and I'd like to incorporate Indigenous science into that, but not just incorporate it, but also in a way that's not tokenistic or sort of, or even exploitative, more like in a way that validates Aboriginal knowledge and puts it in the same sort of area, or like, you know, a respectable reverence as Western science, because, you know, Indigenous knowledge has sort of kept Australia sort of sustainable for a long time. And it's, yeah, globally you see Indigenous science from like the Native Americans or the First Nations Canadians, and people sort of using that information now to learn more about the world and about themselves and how to actually maintain the world. Yeah.
This is an anecdote, which apropos of your comment there, I've been doing some research on the history of fishing in Australia, and one of the things I've been reading recently was from an explorer actually in Wiradjuri country, and he talks about walking past rivers and that the guys he was going with were throwing lines in to the water, and that he was saying that the Wiradjuri people were standing on the riverbanks laughing because they had just fished there.
Yeah.
So there is and he writes this in his diary, that these, you know, they were all laughing, and that they, you know, that this exploration party really didn't know what they were doing or talking about. So there has been an acknowledgement of Indigenous knowledge of this country for a long time. It's not just something that's happened in the last 10 years.
Yeah. But there's also been like a big sort of forgetness of Aboriginal knowledge as well. Like, one of the stories I like to talk about, because it's like not just a Sydney story, but it's a Sydney woman story, is about in Eora, the while men fished, they used to fish on the sides. The people that would go out into the water and fish were the local Gadigal women, and they actually had the fishing knowledge, and they were actually considered, like, you know, the holders of the fishing knowledge. But when Europeans first came, they actually asked the men, because they assumed from, you know, the gender roles in Western society, that's how it would work in, you know, Aboriginal societies. So they didn't actually, and lost out on a lot of sort of, you know, keen fishing knowledge because of that. But then they started fishing, and one of the stories I recently read, which I kind of like, was about sustainability. The way Aboriginal people fished was like not gluttonous, you know, they'd fish for themselves, or they'd also fish seasonally, so they would give time for fish to replenish. But Barangaroo, which that place is named after, she once saw these European men sort of fish and took about, you know, 200, like it was like just this big bag of fish, more fish than the people around, and she nearly broke down in tears, because she just thought it was so gluttonous and wasteful, and it's probably ruining the waterways for a little time being. So yeah,
I'm fascinated by this notion of forgetting, because, you know, you talk about museums and galleries and libraries maybe and archives as memory institutes, but there's also the silencing that they have affected. And you describe yourself as an archival decolonist.
Yeah.
I mean, can you talk about what that means in the context of memory institutes?
Well, I think memory institutions have a long time have been privileging certain voices. Even with, say, with the Australian Museum, Gadigarang, our Sea Country exhibition, which is a beautiful exhibition, that was the first exhibition in 190 years of collecting Aboriginal and displaying Aboriginal objects that was actually curated by Aboriginal people.
Wow.
So if you think about that, like, Aboriginal stories have long been not told, and then when they have been told, they've been told from European perspectives, which have had, you know, repercussions. Like, as a non-Indigenous person, if you went through these sources, you'd be getting the story of Aboriginal people from non-Indigenous people, and it sort of continues itself on, like, and it does leave out a lot of voices, and it also does leave out lots of bit of, like, culture and perspective and stuff like that. Like, one of the stories I like to always think about, it was like a story that Kirsten Thorpe, the archivist, and also the head of Indigenous Services at the State Library of New South Wales, she was telling me that when she used to work at State Records of New South Wales, they have the reserve records there. So people would go there, stolen generation people would want to read their records about themselves or their family, and they would read these records and be like, this is wrong, like, I was there, But the thing is, you know, these aunties and uncles that will have these stories, these lived experiences, won't be as considered as valid as a written record, which even a written record has its own agendas and biases.
Wiradjuri man Nathan Sentence ending that report, produced by Emma Lancaster. And if you'd like to hear the full conversation, head to the 2SER website, 2SER.com, and look for Glam City, that's all one word, or subscribe to the podcast on your favourite podcast app.